Welcome to Hear Me Dragons, the podcast that explores the whole map of who we are, even the uncharted territory. We're back to talk about part two of toxic workplaces or workplaces that simply don't fit, how to survive, how to escape them. I'm here, of course, with, as always, with Claire, the founder and CEO, Chief Empowerment Officer of the Dragonhood. And I am Rachel, head of Fire Breathing, that's social media and content strategy. And we're excited to get back to the conversation that we started last time and delve into what to do once you've identified, hey, I need to get out of this workplace for whatever reason that may be. So we're going to talk to you about exiting, your exit strategy. Okay, so now that you've identified you need to go, how do we do it? Claire, you recently coached me in this situation. It is fresh on our minds. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about your thought process as you were hearing me say that I was ready to leave and that I knew I needed to leave?
Yeah, I think we can even back up a little bit too to just sort of like acknowledge like how hard it is to inwardly make the decision that you need to leave. And we talked about this in the last episode, but the grief associated with that, like grieving the loss of what you thought it should be or could be or what you should be able to do. So acknowledging that and then looking at, there's this like teeny tiny voice way down deep in your brain that's like, there must be a better place or way, or, you know, or just, I think in your case, like became unsustainable for you as a human to hold the emotional work of going into that space every day and being in a place that whose policies and ideals did not align with what your beliefs were personally. And, you know, myself and your loved ones, like watching you candidly be diminished. I'm going to cry, like candidly being diminished over time because you kept going back in there, and we talked about this last time, it was a noble reason, right? Mm-hmm. A noble purpose to keep being a part of this public good that we know is so important. And, you know, the library systems and all the value they can bring to humanity and people, across the socioeconomic spectrum. But yeah, watching you like sort of even having made the decision over much anguish, the decision that you would at some point leave.
Right.
You got that far, right? So yeah. Rachel had sort of determined that like, oh yeah, for sure, I'm going to quit when insert reason here. Mm-hmm. Or when I finish this project or when we get to the end of this milestone in the calendar.
Right.
And just sort of kept pushing it out. And I think it's a difficult thing because you have to be kind to yourself that you weren't ready. And for any of our listeners, be kind to yourself. Like it doesn't, you're just not ready until you're ready. But you have to sort of see yourself reflected in your loved ones around you. And that's hard. That is hard to do.
Yeah.
The people around you are a better reflection of where you're at than you, your perception of yourself too. And I think some of that is a survival skill set too, right, Rachel? Like you mm-hmm. had pushed a lot of this stuff way down just to survive being in there. So yeah. To dredge it up and acknowledge it made it more painful in the short term to continue to go in there, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And it was the constant moving of goalposts. And yeah, definitely when I was taking a harder look at myself and what I had gone through, it became much, much more difficult. That weight of going into those doors was heavier mm-hmm. And harder. And I know we talked about that earlier. You know, the dread, the Sunday night scaries, the dread, all that. And it intensified as this was solidifying for me as knowing that it was the correct decision. You know, for me, dealing with it and, you know, we talked a little bit about vocational awe and coming to terms with having to say goodbye to this career that meant so much to me personally and that, you know, I held this belief system about led to, you know, I actually had anxiety attacks about it and, you know, they would come out of nowhere and it was something I hadn't experienced before. And it was, you know, that was scary on top of everything else. And that's when, you know, when it's impacting your health in such a debilitating way like that. And you know, you can't do it anymore. And I wanted to, even now, sometimes I, you know, like maybe if I had just been a little bit stronger or whatever. And it's that voice that's always telling, that's always making you second guess, I think, some of those decisions. But you know, you were exactly right. And using the people who love me as a barometer for what's going on with me and whether or not I can keep doing it to myself.
It's so hard too. And I think there's this, this is a part of what we want to be and do at the Dragonhood, right? It's, in this case, it's not even about being a dragon. It's a matter of just being, kind to yourself and acknowledging that you're enough, that you're good enough was enough, mm-hmm. even when it wasn't good enough for the toxic system that you were in and couldn't make it work. Because it just wasn't going to work because it was a toxic, you know, dysfunctional system. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, and I think candidly for all our listeners, like you're just in the stages of healing and trying to work through that. It takes so much time. You know, my partner, my husband left a work environment and job that he didn't love. It was really challenging. I saw similar symptoms, right? Physical toll, anxiety, terrible Sunday night scaries. And I'm not talking about like Sunday night scaries where you're like, gosh, it's work. I don't want to do it. Nobody wants to work, right? Like, but the debilitating Sunday night scaries, you know, like that start on Saturday because you know, Sunday is your last day before you have to go back to whatever that thing was. So like those milestone markers, and they may be different for people or manifest differently. Like, you know, Bill's back went out and he was literally debilitated. And I was begging him to quit at that point, right? Because we could, and we're very fortunate to be able to make that choice. Mm-hmm. But frankly, financially, even if we couldn't have done it, we had to, right? His personal yeah. well-being, I was literally worried I was going to lose him, right? And that's the reality of this stuff, right? We're carrying so much of that burden. So not wanting anybody to carry that any longer than they have to, and acknowledge how hard that is, and mm-hmm. that you have to address and feel all that to choose to leave. Right. So it is the harder thing, right? To yeah. continue shoving it all down and not feeling it and right. going into the tough environment over and over, or tough work space, or dredge right. it all up and feel it and decide what to do. So yeah. I think one of the things that might be helpful for people, if you're comfortable, Rachel, is just to talk through like some of the conversations we had, because you really had to like work through, and I think this is very normal, like work through, you said, moving the goalposts, or work mm-hmm. through, like, if, you know, if I'm tough enough or I can figure it out, like there has to be some sort of secret to unlocking it. And the answer is there's no secret. There's nothing you can do. But like, and I want to talk to you about the steps. Like, I want to talk about how the experience of you sort of going through that, and then sort of, I can give some of what I think are good tips of like, here's really little actionable incremental steps for like how to plan your exit. And we even talked about that too, right? As we were having some of these sessions, right? Like, don't go back in there without a resignation letter. If you're going in person here, mm-hmm. don't go back in there without a resignation letter in your back pocket, mm-hmm. and how empowering that is for you. Right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just looking in my drafts folder at that resignation email really helped me get through the last little bit. I know I'm jumping a little bit ahead, but that was definitely some stellar advice. And yeah, just very empowering to look at it. And an email that didn't have any exclamation points, which, as you know, means business.
That's right.
that's the millennial way. But no, yeah. So a lot of those conversations that we started off having, you know, I would say things like, well, I've got this big event coming up and I know I can do it if I just, you know, make more of a work-life balance. You know, I'm kidding myself by talking about this work-life balance that, you know, I would say, oh, I'll delete work email off of my personal cell phone. But guess what? I still have the work laptop. And, you know, it was a work environment where I was getting emails from my supervisor that I had to deal with, or that bombs were being dropped all the time, it felt like, and I had to stay on top of them in order to not feel like I was ambushed when I got into work on a Monday morning. So, you know, at the same time when I'm talking about work-life balance, I also was saying, but I need to know what's coming to prepare myself, to steel myself mentally to be able to handle it. So you see all of this fancy footwork. I'm dancing around the issue, but I'm trying to convince myself that if I can just hang on a little bit longer, do it slightly differently, then maybe I can hang on. I mean, I distinctly remember sitting there and talking to you, Claire, about that one last event. And at first it was this event that was months and months away, but it's the biggest one that I would do annually. I was like, oh, if I could just do that one more time, wouldn't it really beef up my resume? Like all the other times I had done it didn't count. And then after we sort of talked through that, like, oh, hey, you have already done this multiple times. And then I remember saying, well, there's this one other event I want to do with this group that I really enjoy working with, and no one else will treat them as well as I treat, you know, and all of these different ways that I felt like, but if I go, who will fill in those gaps? You know, if I'm gone, who's going to do it the way that I like it to be?
Like, and the answer was no one.
Yeah.
Right. There is no one.
Yeah.
And there's no one who can do it the way you can, mm-hmm. but also no one sees that. And, you know, you're not a heart surgeon. I'm sorry right. to say, not no. leaving patients, in a medical challenge. Like, this is really about just, it's a tough thing to let go of it, right? Like the idea of like literally letting go of the fact that, right, the narrative in your brain is I'm going to fail everybody if I step away from this.
Yes.
And how yeah. terrifying that is. And the yeah. answer is like, you have to let it fail. You have to let it not be as good because they didn't value it while you were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't make that trade-off anymore. And I think it's such a tough thing. And, you know, and you can edit this out if you're not comfortable, but at one point you did say, if I could just get my ADHD under control, mm-hmm. if I could just manage that better, uh-huh. then I might, you know, I could really do it. And you meant it.
I did.
You meant it. And I said, we talked about this analogy of like, you're treading water,
mm-hmm.
you're drowning in this job and you're treading water, and people keep handing you cinder blocks over and over and over again. Oh, here's this big event that you should finish. Or, oh, here's a cinder block for that group that if I'm not there for, no one will be there. And you just kept treading water with more and more and more and more cinder blocks. And like, that's what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to sort of like this half empty view of yourself and how powerful you are and how much you had done, like the power of looking back and saying, no, 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 you did all of this in spite of, and for so long. Right.
Right.
So it's this, this powerful reframe. And when you can reframe things and look at them from a different vantage point, you take all the power back. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the leaving is not a failure and a hole you're leaving behind. The leaving is a recognition of your power and the impact you have and how valuable you are, and that you're going to protect that, right?
Yeah.
It's a totally different narrative that you tell yourself.
Yeah. Instead of giving up or failing or, well, I wasn't strong as these people who can tough it out. It was, wait, I'm actually saving myself. I'm saving myself and I'm saving my family, mm-hmm. and I'm going to put myself in a position where I work at a place that values my skill set and me as a person and respects boundaries and all that sort of thing. You know, it's finally recognizing that I deserve to have those things like everyone does.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking back, as you said, you know, we're just, at the time of recording, it's only been a few weeks. And so it's still hard to hear or to think back over this experience. But even now, I can recognize how my thinking had to change so drastically, you know, and it's shocking to me that, you know, 12 weeks ago when, or 16 weeks or however long ago we were talking, you know, it's like, how did I let myself think that way for so long, you know? But, and now that I'm out of it, I have a lot more clarity. And yeah. I think listeners, you might think that it's going to be impossible to change your mindset about your work, especially if you have any sort of vocational awe or that extra sense of, you know, doing something for the greater good. You can find that it's hard for you to let go of it, but you can, and you will come out healing yourself on the other end.
Yeah. And I think, you know, where you were was authentic and real and like a survival instinct, right? So even being kind to yourself about challenging you to even be kind to yourself, Rachel, and to our listeners of like, wherever you are in this journey or were at that time, you have to be kind to your former self because your former self survived like a champ. Now, it was not easy. It was, you know, again, pushing all the feelings down or whatever it was to get through it, but like you did it. And this sort of like growth that you're experiencing as you recover, and I would really use that word, it's a recovery, right? Like you don't just leave the job and then like, poof, you're better. I feel so much better now because I'm not going to work like this at this place that was not good. It's like you really have to rebuild those muscles of self. Being kind to yourself and your self-talk. You have to rebuild the muscles of a society that defines ourselves. Like when you meet someone at a party, what do? Right? Like that's a hard question to answer sometimes. So really getting past all that, like, we're more than our jobs. We're more than our, you know, choices to stay or go. We are these whole, fulsome, amazing dragons that have so much to offer and dimming your light or shrinking yourself to fit that space was literally toxic for you. So, you know, that decision to leave, and I want to talk through a couple of different like scenarios. So Rachel, in this case, was able to leave without lining up something else. She was able to leave. I think you talked about it in the first part, you know, because there was an opportunity for, you know, the family income to be stabilized and it would be okay to leave. Now for many of us, many listeners, right, that is not a reality. So how do you, and we mentioned this reframe, but how can you take back control, of that experience? And how do you pull your energy back, which I think is a big one, right? You have to take all that energy back that you're giving, like the system is sucking out of you to try and improve it or stay in it. You got to pull it back. You got to do like, and this is going to be hard. What is the bare minimum, right? There's so like bare minimum Monday through Friday. Like what is the bare minimum? So you can take back that emotional energy, take back the self-preservation and redirect that energy into finding a new opportunity. And that's a really powerful reframe when you can't leave without lining something else up, right? Like that's a really important thing. Like it's empowering. You are choosing yourself. You're choosing your self-care. Even though you can't leave that environment right away, like we would all love to like flip the desk over and storm out when we've been so wronged, right? But you know, we make choices to support our families and our livelihoods and all that. So that is a really powerful one. So taking back your energy, dialing it down, dialing down how much you emotionally contribute, right? You know, you've heard the term quiet quitting. You know, it has a negative connotation to it, but I think the reality is like, that is people taking their power back in an environment where post-pandemic, we learned that we could have more or we reprioritized what really mattered. Right. So I think that's a huge one. So in addition, the other reframe that we mentioned was like that reframe of, the negative self-talk, right? Like I am so insert negative phrase here. Because I can't make this work or can't figure this out, or I can't get through to this person, or I can't. The answer is like, I am so strong because I go into this environment every day and I do the minimum so that I can continue to maintain what I'm paid for. And I think a lot of us perform above and beyond our job grade or title or description. And, you know, the system doesn't even necessarily reward you for that. Like, oh, great, you're a high performer. Here's more work, right? So like, take it down, guys, take it down a notch. And the self-talk is, I'm so strong. I'm so brave. I'm so powerful for going in here and choosing, you know, my family's well-being and livelihood while I put that energy into something else better for myself. The other advice I would have for everybody is this is not the time to lean in on skipping anything that has to do with your self-care, whatever that is. And this isn't about how much you can spend, but it's like, if you do 5 minutes of morning meditation, this is the time to lean into that and add another 5 minutes at night. If you do yoga at home or whatever you do to whatever, like if you like exercise, if you like cooking, if you like reading, if you like whatever, double down on the thing that brings you joy and well-being. We all tend to, and I've done it myself, when stuff gets hard and complicated, we forego all the things that make us feel like humans. Mm-hmm. And we rob ourselves of what little refueling and protection against, you know, being at the ragged edge of burnout we might have, right? So that is the other thing. Lean into the things that bring you joy, protect your time, and really focus on how to reframe that space. And reframing is the hardest simple thing you'll ever do. There's these moments when you have a reframe and you're like, your whole world changes. I'll use an example that is not relevant. I come from a long line of notoriously hard sleepers who are insanely groggy and disoriented when we wake up. Naps are worse, but for years I was under the impression that I was just not sleeping enough. I couldn't figure it out. Now, admittedly, there are times in my life when I had challenging jobs or whatever, or any stress, like that's true. But generally speaking, like in a regular day, I wake up super groggy. And my first thought every morning was like, oh my God, I'm so groggy. Why do I keep waking up tired? I must not have gotten enough sleep. So recently I got this app and I was like, oh, it'll track my sleep for me. It'll tell me like what's going on. And the revelation was like, hey, Claire, based on what we've seen the last week, you are groggy for about 90 minutes every morning, like full stop. And like, I went from not being a good sleeper to like, no, you're just groggy for like 90 minutes. So you just have to like account for that. Like what? Like my world blew open. I was a whole different person. Like, and the reframe is it's okay to just be a groggy person for 90 minutes in the morning. Not like, God, I just can't get this sleep thing down, like over and over and over. So when I talk about the power of reframe, like I was telling anybody who would listen about, I'm just groggy in the morning, to which my husband was like, yeah, like not a revelation for him. But anyway, that's the power of reframing. And I think that's a really important one. So, you know, marshal those resources, bare minimum Monday through Friday, lean into self-care and taking care of yourself any which way you can. Put all of that energy you were putting into trying to make it work, trying to make someone understand, into a new search, new opportunity. And the last thing I'll say for everybody is tell and talk to your network that you are interested in looking for something else. You have to say out loud that you are, hey, I'd love to talk to you about what you do. Have those networking sessions. And for folks that are virtual, it can be tough, right? To lean into LinkedIn and sort of do outreach or say interested in work, or look for networking with just people, right? So whether it's a book club or, so, you know, any kind of environment, coffees, cars and coffee, like, you know, you see all these things, like anything you can do is like, hey, what do you, you know, just start networking with people and really voice your interest in either people that you know have careers that you're interested in, hear how they got started, have those conversations and build that sphere of influence. And see what you can manage. And you'll start to hear about either things you're more interested in or hadn't considered. And or, you know, that network will start to help you look for opportunities. And I know, you know, we could probably do a whole episode on that too. But, you know, we'll save that for what proverbially part three. but I have been talking for a hot minute. Let me pause there.
Those tips were great, Claire. And I think a really good way for people to be thinking about what they can actually do, what they can put on a to-do list to get through that period of time. That was really helpful. And I know we've touched on this already, but I did want to mention again that the recovery process takes a surprisingly long time. Whether your workplace was toxic or it was just a bad fit for you, you'll find that it is going to take a long time. In my case, I'm looking at over a decade invested in a place, and I was expecting myself to magically be over it in a couple weeks. That's not how that works. definitely need time and time to really, I think, assess what the workplace relationship might have done to you, or how you were reacting to it, and what you might need to do in order to help yourself move forward. You know, we'll carry some of that baggage with us, of course, along. And we've talked about that before as well, that you do carry some of that emotional baggage from bad workplaces, just like you do with bad relationships. But recognizing it is a great first step, and then you can just work on it. And that's what I am trying to do. And, you know, I'm seeing even now, post my role at the library, that I'm dealing with some issues that I think are kind of universal when you leave something that you've done for so long. And, you know, I'm looking at things like my self-confidence in my work, focus, all that kind of stuff, motivational issues, those aspects of work that, you know, I was plowing ahead with for so long, and now that it's not there, it's like, oh, okay. So I need to get back to where I started with having some of that just innate stuff going on with me. So, and just another reminder to those of you who are listening who might be thinking about it and thinking like, oh, well, I hope I can just like bounce back. Bouncing back, I want us to like remove that from our vocabulary. Bouncing back is not a real thing, whether it's bouncing back from pregnancy or bouncing back from a toxic workplace. We don't just bounce back from things. We have to work on ourselves and work through them and admit about changes that you've had, how you're different. And I think that's healthy. So Claire, as always, you leave us with a great action item for us to work on until the next episode. What do you have for us today?
I actually have two today. So one is to look at opportunities for those of you that are still in it. What is in your control and what is out of your control? And spoiler alert, the only thing in your control is what is inside of you and your actions and how you move through space. So think about that. And I want you to look at where you might have opportunities to reframe. And that's the list I want you to focus on. What is in your control? Let go. It's very difficult. Start letting go, or think about those things you could let go of, depending on where you're at in this journey, right? Start thinking about that. Those things are out of your control. Just let them go, or start letting them go. And then start really looking at, like, what do you have the power to reframe? What is in your control that you can change? You can take some of your energy back, emotional energy back, and look at differently that could be empowering or uplifting for you in the current state, right? The other thing that I want to leave everybody with for an action item is to look for the small joys every single solitary day. Gratitude journaling, or looking for the gratitude, is just an immense part of, you know, my wellness practice, right? I'm one of the things that I really love. If anybody knows me, I love coffee. I love having coffee with my husband in the morning. I love going out with friends. I look forward to it. Like, that's a little joy that I have every single day. You might have joy in putting together a fabulous outfit, like our dear Rachel does. She's a fashionista, right? So that may bring you joy every day, or putting together, you know, doing a little sketching, or any, whatever the joy is, whatever it is, right? Making a really cool breakfast, or, you know, that cool water bottle, that new water bottle that you just love, right? What is unabashed joy in these little things? Once you start collecting them, you'll see so many every day. So the thing I want to ask everyone to do too is, so when you look at your reframe list, Also look at your joy list and your gratitude list. There's so many moments of joy and gratitude every day. I bet if you try to write three down every day, you could find them. And it's a really lovely thing to do before you go to sleep or get ready for bed. And I will share my hack with all of you. This is a gratitude hack. We have our phones with us all the time. I take pictures of things that bring me joy throughout the day. And you can flip right through and you go, look, oh my gosh, there's that flower I saw that was so cool. Or there was that light that was streaming through that was pretty neat. Or my husband hates it. Here's my husband sitting on the porch with me drinking coffee. But those are the things. So that's my action item for everybody. And, you know, just really start to think about those things. And these are little steps that will go a long way.
No, I love that. And I had originally told you that I thought I had truly failed at taking care of myself. But then when we talked about it a little bit further, I realized that, oh, I did keep up that practice of dressing up every day and putting together an outfit that, you know, I felt confident in. So I think even if you are just looking at the surface area and you're not seeing it, it's there somewhere. You've got something that you can do that's a pretty easy thing that you can keep up daily to keep those spirits high.
That's right. I love that, Rachel. And I think we want to remind everybody of our mantra, which is be authentic, be curious, be accepting of yourself too. Take up space and awaken your inner dragon.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And best of luck this week as you are assessing yourself and making some of those wonderful gratitude journals in the evenings. And we look forward to talking to you next time. Stay tuned, dragons.